we're in Matthew 24, and it was interesting as I thought about where we're going to be, you know, when as Easter comes and we're coming down to these last several chapters, and said, okay, Lord, are you going to land us right at the right time? And it's close. It's close. We're going to focus on a couple other things, but it's amazing to me as we looked at chapter 24 in these last several chapters, how big of a chunk is dedicated to that last week of life that Jesus had. We hear these stories and we think, oh, it's just more of the stories. But to really, as we looked at Matthew, you really see the journey and you see the tension of relationships that he's had and built. And people, some love him, some not quite sure he is, some claim him as Messiah, and some are just flat out don't like him. Matthew 24, as Jesus says, they're leaving the temple building. As we remember, the disciples are like, aren't these buildings amazing? These stones are massive. And then Jesus breaks in, just like, yeah, you know what? Not one of these stones is going to get left on top of each other. And they're like, what? And what do they ask him? He says, Jesus, when is this going to happen? What are going to be the signs? And so then as he goes through, he gives them a bunch of signs of the end times about when this is going to happen. And really, he doesn't say when. He says, this is what it's going to look like. These things are going to, the problems in the world, the earthquakes, the famine, the wars, the rumors of wars, things are just going to be a mess. And the persecution of Christians and those things, the abomination of desolation that he quotes from Daniel is like, you know, what is that about? And he just tells these signs. And you ever ask those questions that somebody ever never quite answers your question? And so really, it's like, Jesus, when will this happen? You know, yes, all these signs coming, but when are you coming back? When will you return? We'll pick up Matthew 24 and verse 36. Matthew 24, verse 36. But about the day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. When will this happen? No one knows the day or the hour. Part of the translation of that, we don't think of that as like nobody knows the second or minute, but really the word, as they translate that, it could be interpreted, nobody knows the month or the year. So we look at these signs, and we talked about before, and some of you who are love Revelation end times, we can go back and look at the day and the hour that these amazing Bible scholars knew when Jesus was going to come back, right? The countdown. The last time I remember, I think it was around 1990, I was down in the Bay Area, and there were people following this pastor who knew they were coming, and they maxed out their credit cards because they weren't going to have to pay it, which doesn't seem very Christian to me. But then they knew that Jesus is coming back because he was a Bible scholar and he laid it out, man. And you know, maybe there's some great stuff, but that day, guess what? Came and went, and they have to pay off their credit cards. As I look at this from the scripture, when somebody says Jesus is coming and hear all the signs, he's coming, I just look at this and no one knows when. That these are the signs, and the signs they quote, and you and I know this is the world's in turmoil. And these are the signs, and things are getting closer, and things are worse than they have been before, and things are lining up. But Jesus says they don't know. Not the angels, nor even Jesus. And that's a whole theology in of itself. Jesus, the Son of God, has a pretty good relationship with his Father. He doesn't know. Well, Philippians gave us this, the criteria and the theology of that is that Jesus left heaven. He not only left heaven, which I imagine is a pretty cool place, wouldn't you say? To come down and be on earth and to love us, the thing we celebrate communion, to lay his body down and to die for us. But not only did he leave heaven and the comfort, whatever that looks like, the heaven, amazing worship, sinless place, but he left some of his ability behind. And apparently he left his, he willingly gave up his ability to see the future. Although we see bits and glimpses of it, that apparently the Father said, this is my will, because it says he did nothing that the Father didn't tell him to do. So in those places that he gives signs, the Father is downloading and says, you need to tell them this. Okay, you need to go here. You need to heal this. You need to tell them this. He didn't know at that point when that would be. It's just, it's fascinating that he, as powerful he was, for him to be human, as we get to watch that. And so there's things you can know and there are things you don't know, but that doesn't change the reality of them. That faith, those signs, just like when Noah was building the ark and preparing for the flood, people, we, you know, you see the VeggieTale things or whatever, it's like, oh, hey, I'll give you, you know, we're going to build some condos over here. I'll give you, you know, I'll make you a rich person, buy your wood, your, instead of your ark, sell it to me. Or those challenges, crazy Noah, can you believe that crazy guy's been building that ark for 100 years? It's like, what in the world? But he kept building it. Up until the moment, right, the flood came. They're like, there probably wasn't a cloud in the sky, maybe blue sky. Life went on. No crazy Noah, you know. And then it came. Jesus says, it's just going to be just like that. They had the signs. Everybody knew, could see for miles Noah's ark. They could see it. That was the sign. That's a big boat. We got little boats. That's a big boat. That's the sign. It's coming. They didn't believe it. They didn't believe it. Just like that, it'll be suddenly like that. Two men will be farming and one's taken and one's left. Two women at the grinding wheel, grinding there, working life as normal, going about their day. One is left, one is taken. Like that. Verse 42, therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would have not have left his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Jesus has changed gears here. He's changing from the signs that are coming, and he's going to talk about when. You don't know when. We just know the signs. But he's going to break into four illustrations about what you need to do to be ready for Jesus' return. What do you need to do to be prepared so that you're not caught off guard when Jesus returns? What does he say? Always keep watch. Just like watching for a thief in the night. It's inconvenient. How many of you guys like to stay up at night? You know, you do. Okay, but my guess is you sleep a long time in the daytime. Yeah, there's nobody who can go without sleep. You just shift your clock. But it's inconvenient, right? How many hours of the day do you need to watch to prevent the burglary of a thief? All of them. You have to watch all of them. That's what Jesus' point is. You cannot let down your guard. You always have to be watching. Okay, Lord, what's going on? What's going on? Verse 45. Who then? As he goes into a second illustration, who then is faithful and wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What Jesus has said is always watch, but then he says, determined to be a faithful servant, right? Faithful and wise. It's like, what is it that you're going to do? Faithful servants are evident by how they live. They aren't passive in what they do. They are about their responsibilities. Okay, what am I assigned to do? The master has gone away, and he's given me some assignments. He's giving me some things to be responsible for. That's what my business needs to be about, to take care of his kingdom, to take care of the people that he's put in your care, your friendships, your relationships, your marriage, your kids, fellow believers, those relationships that we have. I was asking somebody the other day, I was just Ecclesiastes, Solomon makes a statement, life is meaningless. Everything you do is meaningless. And I just think as I get older, I was like, you know, Solomon's thing was like, you build something for somebody else to enjoy after you die. It's like, what's the point? And I've been here in my 8th year at Lebanon Foursquare, and we're quite a large church now, wouldn't you say? It's like, what's the point? You know, it can be discouraging. It's like, what in the world? What is going on? As I talked to my friend about that, he said, you know, there's two things that we get to keep. One is relationship, and the other one is our character. Those are two things that we will take into eternity with us. And I just think about that, that the challenge of both those things play out here. Relationships of this unwise, unfaithful servant who beats the people he's supposed to be responsible for. We have a world of people who abuse relationships. They use people for what they can get out of them instead of caring for them. You can't fake character. You can't fake character. Unfaithful servants abuse those in their care. They use their master's resources for their own entertainment, for their own pleasure, instead of what is intended. And Jesus, I think of that unexpected return, it's really about revealing people's character. You know, when you tell people, say, hey, the boss is watching, the camera's on up there, watch what you do. Real character happens whether people are watching or not watching. That's how you can tell about characters. I think when nobody's watching, how do you live? How do you spend your time? What do you do? I think Jesus, he's this kingdom. How do you get a God to have a kingdom of heaven filled with people who want to be there? You know, if you ask a line, how many of you want to go to heaven? You ask the world that question? Every single one of them would say yes, I suspect. You know, we know that there's people who would say, I don't want anything to do with it. But I think when you get down to it, they're saying no because it requires them to change. But if you'd ask them, do you want to be rich or do you want to be poor? Do you want to be satisfied or do you want to be hungry and desolate? You know, we'd say yes. But God isn't about just giving blessing. He's about what is going on inside of us and how you tell character. Just in the, you know, I talked about, to me, getting married is like the first lesson of relationship. And the second one is having children. I love both of those situations. I'm a different man because of those two relationships. And it's because I think parenting is one of those things where you discover how good of a dad God is to you and me by parenting. And I would tell my kids, it's like what I, to be able to go away and trust them. Say, I trust you. I'm going to go away. And we're going to find out. And you may not even warn them, but we would go away. I always laugh about that. My story of going away and the rule that was during the week was don't watch TV. School night, don't watch TV. And it partly was for me too. TV was a waste of time. I'd find distracted, but it was for them. And we'd go away to something and a date or whatever, or at church and come home. And the curtains were shut, and behind the curtains was the glow of the TV. And they would hear the garage door open, and you'd see the TV go off. And you'd come in the house, and they would might be sitting, getting ready for a shower, sitting at the table, studying. And I would say, come here. Come in the living room with me. And I'd lay my hands on the TV. I said, this TV feels warm. Why would that be? It's character. Character always shows up in what we do and what we are. And as Jesus challenges and said, listen, be a faithful servant. That's about character. You can muscle through with us for a week or 2 weeks or maybe a month, but a lifetime. Character. The challenge. And we step into Matthew 25. He goes into the next illustration of how to prepare for his return. Matthew 25, verse 1. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in the jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming. And they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all of the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both of us and you, for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. Lord, Lord, they said, open the door for us. But he replied, truly, I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. I think about just saying lots of different observations. If I think about that, getting ready for Jesus to arrive is to be equipped for that delay. It's like, you don't know. I laugh about, as we took trips, my wife was super good at planning for delays, the unexpected, and there were always snacks in the car. It's like, you know, it's like, how long is it going to be? Here's a snack. Eat this. It's like, okay, we can last a little longer. Those things you do for a delay, because it's terrible to wait, and you're like, what do I do? He says, plan. Be equipped for the delay. There's lots of studies in about, okay, the oil is the Holy Spirit, you know, and oh man, what happens if you're like, you know, first of all, this bridegroom has multiple wives, you know, it's not about marriage, right? The point is what Jesus is teaching is about being ready, being equipped for the long haul, all of this stuff. Here's all the signs, and as he talks about the signs, it feels like it's impending, imminent, meaning it could be any minute, but at the same time, he says what? Prepare for the long haul. Prepare, be equipped. I just think about it. As I look at these wise virgins and these foolish virgins, I think about their stuff that only we can be responsible for. I can only get Jesus for myself. I can't get him for you. You have to have your own relationship with Jesus. You have to walk out your own faith journey. People can say, hey, give me some of your faith. I can't give you some of my faith. You have to walk out that faith yourself. And I think about these virgins, these foolish ones, were operating maybe in a sense on some shallow faith, Faith that didn't allow them for the long haul to say, hey, there's going to be problems. You're going to have people that hate you and don't like you, and they maybe even kill some of you. Those are the signs. Stay faithful to the end. This equipping of being ready for that delay so that in that moment, because you think about that impending, they get the news to go out, hey, Jesus is coming. Go out and get ready. And then really, you see that in the world. It's like, oh my goodness, there's crazy stuff going on. I just read, you know, in the paper this morning, another mass murder in Sacramento, California. I was like, you know, part of me, I read that stuff because I want to understand the world we live in, but I don't want to read it because it's terrible. But I think about it, it's getting worse. How many murders we've had, even over COVID, it's gotten worse and worse. And kids in school don't care. They don't care. It's like, why? It's the bridegroom say, hey, come, I'm on my way. So we're saying, okay, Jesus, we're ready. He said, we see the anxiety, the pressure of him immediately coming, but at the same time, it may not be in our lifetime. We don't know. The signs are happening. Jesus is saying, be ready. Be ready. Watch, be ready in the moment, but be ready for the long haul. Watch, be equipped for what's going on. Even after they fall asleep, life goes on. They're true disciples of Jesus, have relationship with him, and are ready regardless of delay. You think, how can, you know, Jesus so loving is like, oh, open the door back up for him. For them, they just forgot to bring enough oil. What's wrong with that? But there's a heart behind it. It's like when you know something's important, let's say you're taking a desert trip in your Jeep, and you know that the trip is a couple hundred miles, and you know your tank will last that long of gas, but you also know there's no stores, no gas station, and no stores, no way to get food. Do you go on that trip with just a tank full of gas? Why? Because it will what? Cost you your life. If something unusual happens, it's like a pilot. There's a rule about, right, when they take their flights, they take extra fuel. So that in case something happens, they can get to another airport. In case they can't land, they can circle around. They plan ahead. And Jesus says, plan ahead. You don't know. This is so important. It will cost you your life. You know, the illustration is like, if you don't prepare for the future, you won't last. It's about relationship. Jesus said, I never knew you, because those disciples that care about and see the significance of the kingdom will last. They'll say, no, this is important. Right? This in the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus said, if your right hand causes you trouble, what are you supposed to do? Cut it off. It's not about body mutilation. It's about things that are super important to you. It's not worth it. Jesus is trying to heighten. It's like, watch, prepare for my return. Be ready for my return. And this is the next one. I'm into reading the whole Bible sometimes, so I'm sorry, there's a lot of slides here, but we're going to read verse 14 to verse 30 here as Jesus comes into this last illustration. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag. Each according to his ability. Then he went away on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more bags. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Verse 19, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. the man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many more things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. As Jesus challenges, like, well, how do we prepare? He says, man, you need to work what God has given you. You need to put to work what God has given you. Hey, really, again, there's 2 types of servants. We talk about the 2 other types, with the faithful and unfaithful. Here, it's also the faithful and unfaithful, the wise and unwise servant. The one who's faithful for the long haul will always be ready. The one who's faithful will always be caring for the kingdom. The one who's faithful will always be preparing for the unexpected. And now, faithful to multiply what God has given you. I look at this amount of money, because Jesus told this parable in another context. But really, that bag of gold, I think, was a talent, as we looked at before, is equal 20 years of labor. So each bag of gold, 20 years of labor. So he gave how many bags to the first guy? 5 bags. 100 years to make that much money. Is that a lot of value? Okay, he gave the guy 1 bag, which is 20 years of labor. Is that a lot of money? That's a lot of money. I just think that the picture here of the value that the kingdom has been given to each one of us. God has given something valuable to each one of us. Part of not recognizing, that guy was nervous about what he was going to invest. Nervous about what he was going to invest. What does Jesus say? How did the master determine what he was going to give each one? What did he say? He says, according to their ability. So somehow this guy with 5 bags was a 5 ability guy. The master knew and said, hey, I know I can trust this guy. He's really good. He's got skills. A lot. This 2-bag guy, he had a 2-bag of ability. And the 1-bag guy, he was a 1-bag guy ability. All significant. All were given something super valuable. As we look at that illustration, every single one of us is giving something super valuable. Super, I mean, beyond, it would have been unheard of for somebody to invest even 1 bag of gold in somebody. This master does. God has given us at least 1 bag of gold. Something super valuable that he's given according to our ability. In other words, The implication is that it's almost a guaranteed success. That God, this master, gave these guys, knowing their ability, all they had to do was work what God had given them, and there would be a return for it. There's an accountability that each of us have is we are given things of value. It's like, I don't have been given much. I'd say that's probably that kind of the attitude that the one bag gold guy gets to put it in the ground saying, this is, we have no idea what his issues are. I mean, I suspect he says, I knew you were like a really mean boss. You know, and I suspect because of the master's, it did die on me. I'm going to have to replace those batteries every week. I really use up batteries, I guess.
Prepare.
Well said. Steven said, I need to be prepared. I'm going to just keep an extra set of batteries in my pocket or change them out every morning. Well said. Prepared. As we just talk of the challenge about being using what God has given us, that we, most of us struggle with recognizing that we have is valuable. And it's probably, and it's been a process for me. You know, each of us has our story that we've devalued who we are. We look at other people and say, oh, they've got the gift. It's, oh, no, they do so much better. Oh, they're natural at it. Well, maybe they're a five-bag person. But you're still a two-bag or one-bag person. You're still accountable for what you've given. And what you've been given is super valuable. You know, that enemy that says, the voice that comes says, what you have isn't enough or isn't good. That's a lie. It's illustrations like this. What is Jesus says, this, again, is what the kingdom is like. In the sense that he says, this is what it will be, in the sense there will be a judgment when we don't use what God's given us. When you and I hear those voices saying that we don't have something valuable, that's not from God. That's from the enemy of our soul. To be able to walk in, I don't care if it's the most simple person, quiet person, you have something super valuable to bring that you encourage my heart. And just being who you are in kindness and speaking words, it's huge. Kingdom principle. Use what you've been given and more will be given. All of them. He says, you're responsible for this. You're going to be responsible for all of my possessions, all the kingdom. Misuse what you've been given and it will be taken away from you. Opportunity taken away, invitation taken away. Doors will be shut instead of doors that were open. We like to think of Jesus as super loving all the time. He's like, it doesn't matter if you did your homework or not. Everybody gets an A. Right? We have problems with that in school, right? Why would we think heaven, it is not about earning God's entrance. It's about being faithful to what we've been getting. And faithfulness is character. Faithfulness is relationship. And I always think as like, how could you treat a person like that you cared about? Well, the answer is you don't care about them. Preparing for Jesus' return. As this is this super busy Tuesday that Jesus had of Holy Week. As we discover the unwrapping of Matthew of this last week, it moves into what the Bible scholars call Silent Wednesday, where there's no interaction. They head back to Bethany. So as he teaches these disciples, it's for them to get a hold of first, and then so they can teach others. So as you know the word, that you see people who want to quit, say, don't quit. I want to quit too. Don't quit. I want to be ready when Jesus comes back to say, well done, good and faithful servant. I want to be there So I catch him. I'm not caught off guard. I'm like on the boat, man. He said, let me on, Noah. It's like, I want to be ready for when the flood comes. Not yet, man. We're not ready yet. I still got some fire to put on here. Okay, but I'm right here. I'm going to camp around here, man. I'm right here. I'm not going to go on a journey. I'm right here. I'm going to be ready. I'm watching. I'm looking. Be ready. Be prepared. This is, I think, one of the most significant applications of the Christian walk to be faithful. You know, all those different aspects. Watching, being faithful with what you've been given, responsibilities, all those aspects of who we are in the church. So that we are a bride that's holy and ready for the return of the King. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for your word. Lord, I don't want to just preach and teach. Lord, I want to be changed by your word. Lord, and I know that as I grab a hold of this for myself and my own walk and my own challenges, Lord, that then I can teach others, because I'm not just teaching your word, but I'm encouraging them. Jesus, you taught this because it took faith and trust that you're coming back. Faith and trust in knowing that what your kingdom, the reward that waits on the other side, far outweighs the stresses and the struggles of being faithful until you return. Lord, I'm ready right now for you to return. Lord, but I also want to be ready if you don't return. Lord, so that in my lifetime, so that you speak those words to me, well done, good and faithful servant. Lord, I thank you for my family here at church. Lord, that as we encourage each other to walk out your kingdom and not give up, that it would be a reflection of your kingdom. I thank you for the gifts that you've placed in. Lord, thank you that I'm the recipient of the return on what people have invested in your kingdom, the gifts that you've given them. I'm a recipient of that. Lord, I pray that I would be a good investor of what you've given me so that others experience the return, the blessing of return. In Jesus' name, amen.